This is The Guardian.
Today, on the front line of the Poland-Belarus border, where thousands of asylum seekers are trapped in freezing conditions and between hostile forces.
The situation is very dramatic there. Thousands of asylum seekers, hundreds of families, hundreds of children are literally trapped in this situation.
No go to Poland. We are go to Germany. Germany is life.
They can't go back and they can't continue their journey to Europe. They're trapped in this piece of land at the gate of Europe. Trapped between the violence of the Polish authorities and the violence of the Belarusian regime.
Obey the law and leave this place. Staying here is forbidden. Obey
the law. Lorenzo Tondo is a Guardian correspondent who covers migration to Europe. He's been on the Polish border with Belarus, a place he says is, right now, like a war zone.
In the night, temperature go below zero. It's very cold. Asylum seekers are living in small tents, damp sleeping bags. They don't want to be found by the police and they hide in the most hidden places of the forest. And when it gets dark, the fog covers almost the entire forest. One day we had a search and he sent us this location. There were these families who had just crossed the border. It was in the middle of nowhere, in the forest near Narewka. So we tried to find these families and we walked for about 30 minutes, literally in the middle of nowhere. It was starting to get dark.
Abbiamo ricevuto un'informazione che c'era un gruppo di 16 persone bloccate qui.
And while I was walking in this forest, I thought of the Syrian and Iraqi children. They walk every night in these woods, often with no food, no water, no medical assistance, often with no shoes. At the end, we found them, 16 people, about three families, 8 children in total. There was a woman who could barely walk. They had early signs of hypothermia. These families, they came from Iraqi Kurdistan, and they were fleeing from ISIS retaliation. There was a newborn, 4 months old. They had attempted to cross the border 9 times, being pushed back each time. It's literally a race to who can get to them first, police or volunteers, soldiers or doctors. If the Polish police arrived before the doctors, they would send the migrants back to Belarus.
This gauntlet that refugees and asylum seekers are running is brutal, but it's also manufactured. A deliberate policy on the part of Belarus to weaponize migrants, challenging Poland and the EU to turn them back. And they're doing it, including this week, using water cannons and tear gas. From The Guardian, I'm Michael Safi. Today in Focus, the desperate men, women and children caught between Belarus and Fortress Europe. Lorenzo, this is happening at several points in Belarus's border with Europe, including Lithuania and Latvia, but the hotspot has been at the Polish border where you've spent the past few days meeting some of the people trying to get through. Can you tell me about them?
We talked to dozens of migrants. They come from Iraqi Kurdistan, Syria, Afghanistan too. You know, I hate making a difference between economic migrants and refugees. But even if you want to make that difference, these people are refugees. They're coming from war-torn countries.
And can you tell me about one of the people you met, someone called Ansari?
Even my own family in Iraq, I haven't been...
We met this man from Iraq in Bialystok, about 20 miles from the border, in a reception facility.
A smuggler helped my wife and my son-in-law get out.
Ansari lived in the UK, His family remained in Iraq, very kind and friendly man. He worked as an interpreter. I mean, Ansari speaks seven languages. His wife was shot by ISIS in Iraq. And when Ansari, like thousands of his fellow countrymen, heard the rumor they could fly to Europe from Minsk, he went to Poland to help his family when they crossed the border.
They were walking and someone said, I know someone, he can send us a car, but you have to pay a lot of money. I don't know how much they paid, but I gave her, as they say, green light. I say, sell the houses for a cheap price. Sell them. Tell your brother to sell all whatever I have. Just rescue yourself because my wife is injured. I told you that she was shot by ISIS. I think they paid a lot of money just for a car to get her out.
And then he decided to stay. He understood that his work was important for other people in this dramatic situation.
They pay up to 3,500 to Minsk.
Yes.
Ansari has described very well how the travel works.
Yes. From there, they get a taxi.
Yeah.
The taxi is, normally, the taxi is $120.
He told me that a few months ago in Syria, in Lebanon, and Iraq, Belarus embassy started spreading the news that they were going to give tourist visas to people. And the news spread quickly. People realized there was another way to reach Central Europe. And it was a huge news for asylum seekers. There was a way to get to Europe without having to walk for a month in the Balkan route or to cross the sea between Turkey and Greece. So there are all these travel agencies in the Middle East, specifically in Iraq and Syria, who, according to migrants, they have a strong connection with the local Belarusian embassies. They're offering packages, travel packages, 3,000, 5,000 euros on average. And the package includes a 7-day tourist visa, a flight ticket, one way to Minsk, and 2 days in a hotel in Minsk.
Definitely connected. The agency in Syria or Iraq are definitely connected to the Belarus.
I don't say 100%. I say 120%.
Okay, perfect.
Lorenzo, as well as meeting Iraqis on this border, you also met people from Afghanistan. Can you tell me about who it was that you met there?
We met there an Afghan man. His wife was pregnant and had already a child. He was probably 6 or 7. His name is Zawad. He left Afghanistan after the fall of Kabul. He told me he started to plan his departure since May, so about 3 months before the fall of Kabul.
You left because of the Taliban?
Yeah, I left because of the Taliban. I used to work for America. I was forced by the situation because I'm ethnically a Hazara.
Yeah, so you are in danger.
We were in danger and my father was military, so I had to leave Afghanistan.
He's a Hazara, a minority ethnic group in Afghanistan facing persecution under the Taliban. He was working for an American company in Kabul. You know, Zawad had millions of reasons to leave the country, but his cry for help was totally ignored.
I sent thousands of emails to them asking for protection, but no help. So
he had to leave the country. He didn't even want to talk about his journey. He doesn't want to remember the atrocity he had to go through.
When did you cross the border from Belarus to Poland? You remember?
I don't remember the exact date because we had a journey of 3-4 nights.
Almost all of the migrants are telling us that the guards at the border, they are gathering a group of 50 people and then they are cutting with shears the barbed wire, letting them in.
In Belarus, the things that I saw in that jungle, it was out of this world. It's a crime against humanity. The only thing that I can say about situation in that forest is a crime
in the Belarus forest.
In the Belarus and Poland forest.
Oh, yeah.
Both sides.
The fact that you are made to Poland, it means that there is a good chance that you are going to be pushed back by the Polish authorities. Families that we have met, I mean, they have been pushed back like 9 or 8 times each.
Yeah, I myself was kicked by a Polish border guard. My wife was pushed by Polish border guards. I was thrown in the dirt by Polish guards. I saw Belarus guards beating a person. So basically, overall, it's a crime against humanity. It's a tragedy right now happening in that.
We've heard Belarusian guards are actually cutting the wire at the border fence, letting refugees make this terrible journey into Poland. But Poland is part of the EU and it has humanitarian obligations to allow refugees into the country. So why isn't it doing that?
So the Polish president, Andrzej Duda, has described this as a military attack.
W ostatnich dniach nasz kraj stał się celem ataku hybrydowego sterowanego przez KGB Aleksandra Łukaszenki.
Now, let's not forget that an anti-immigration right-wing government is currently in power in Poland. It was Polish Independence Day. The neo-Nazis are marching every year in the streets of Warsaw for the Independence Day. And they did last Thursday, too. This time, neo-Nazis were all yelling and shouting, "Kill the migrants at the border." Polish authorities have created this 2-mile-deep militarized zone. They built a razor wire fence. Journalists and volunteers are not allowed in.
We drove towards the border on the Polish side this evening. The particular crossing we're near has been closed since 7 a.m. this morning as a result of what's happening.
We're British journalists from Channel 4 News.
There are checkpoints everywhere, and only residents can enter the zone. Residents who live in small villages inside the secured zone. Poland has deployed about 20,000 between soldiers and police officers at the border. It is a show of force unknown in the country since the end of the Cold War. We were staying in this hotel and we arrived to check in. We thought we had the wrong address because there were dozens of military trucks in front of the building and dozens of soldiers in front of the building. We thought it was a barrack, but it was the right address. But there are so many military that there is no more room for them in the nearby barracks. So they're staying at the hotels. Poland is using these soldiers and police officers to push back migrants violently, brutally. Migrants had broken legs, bruises everywhere. They told us that the Polish police had beaten them up. I think we should remember that pushbacks are illegal. Any pushback is a violation of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the Geneva Convention, and the EU legislation.
You say the people that you met on the Polish side had bruises, had broken legs. That's a really serious allegation that Poland is actually beating and attacking these asylum seekers as they come over the border. What do the Poles say to that?
The Polish government has never responded to the accusation of pushbacks and the violence used against migrants. What they are saying constantly is that that's their duty to defend Europe's border.
As you approach the Polish border with Belarus, an automatically generated text message warns any refugees to turn around.
The Polish border is sealed. Belarusian authorities told you lies. Go back to Minsk.
Okay, and the migrants who managed to break through this militarized zone you're talking about, who are able to evade these Polish police and Polish soldiers, what's waiting for them on the other side?
If they manage to cross the border, and if they are lucky to find volunteers and doctors and asylum lawyers, and if the police is not going to push them back, then they are going to apply for asylum. They usually are moved to first to a detention center. They have to undergo a period of quarantine. And then they are moved to other facilities where they share their rooms with other migrants from the Middle East. And there they are waiting for their application for a refugee status. It could take months for them to wait for an answer by the Polish authorities. In the meantime, many of them are trying to move to Germany anyway, without even waiting for their asylum application.
Anna? Andrew Roth, you're The Guardian's Russia correspondent, and one of the unusual things about this story is that Belarus doesn't really make sense as a gateway into Europe if you're an Iraqi or Afghan refugee. It's landlocked, it's nowhere near the Middle East or Afghanistan, and you have to actually fly over the EU to get there. We've heard claims from migrants on the ground of the involvement of Belarusian embassies in this process, but just how explicit is Belarus's role in all of this? What has the president, Alexander Lukashenko, said publicly?
Lukashenko, his government, has kept, you know, this at arm's length. They obviously don't want to say openly what they're doing, which is sort of creating a new or engineering a new migrant crisis. But it's clear that they have a very important role in this.
В современном мире браться за оружие, но это смерть подобная, это самоубийство.
The Belarusian state's kind of actions and its involvement in the situation is fairly obvious to pretty much everybody who's watching the situation. Belarusian troops have played a very large role in getting people to the border. We saw a column of asylum seekers going toward the border. In the last few weeks, we've seen them being accompanied by Belarusian soldiers. We've seen them kind of pushing them towards the border, and then we've seen them crucially refusing them entry back into Belarus. So the idea is to move migrants toward the border and then to keep them there. We see in the kind of Belarusian state news agencies a lot of focus on how Polish authorities, Lithuanian authorities treat asylum seekers who do make it across the border.
It's clear from the people that Lorenzo met that this has been happening for months now, right back to the summer. So why has it only culminated now? Why is it only in the last couple of weeks that the crisis has become so acute?
There are two key elements. First is that the weather is changing. It's becoming fall and winter. You know, earlier when it was possible that people could survive in the forests or they could survive in other places, now it's becoming really dangerous. We've already seen about 10 deaths from exposure or from other problems in the kind of forests between Poland and Belarus. The second thing is that there does appear to be some kind of organization too, of not just, you know, a couple of groups or dozens of asylum seekers arriving at the border. But last week we saw a column of hundreds of people leave Minsk, head to the border near a Polish city called Kuznica, and really walk down basically a crowded highway right toward the border. And I think that that spectacle of hundreds or more than, you know, thousands of people really refocused attention on this crisis that's kind of been simmering through the entire summer.
European Union countries accuse Minsk of fueling an uptick in migrant crossings.
Hundreds of men, women, and children headed to the Belarusian border.
Andrew, we've talked to you before about the mounting tensions between Belarus and the EU.
A worrying statement from Belarus's interior ministry as the government continues to crack down on protests that have shaken the country for over 2 months.
They started growing after Lukashenko's fraudulent election last year and the subsequent crackdown on pro-democracy protesters.
Late into the night, EU leaders finally broke a diplomatic deadlock, agreeing to impose sanctions on Belarus.
The next flashpoint was after the forced landing of a Ryanair flight by Belarusian jets and the arrest of the blogger Roman Protasevich.
There's been a chorus of condemnation across Europe tonight after a Ryanair plane flying from Greece to Lithuania was diverted to Minsk in Belarus and a dissident Belarusian journalist on board was detained. State media in Belarus.
You say that it was around that time when Europe levelled another round of sanctions against Belarus that we got the first hints of this migration crisis that we see playing out now.
It was around that time that Lukashenko said, you know, we can create a lot more problems for Europe. We catch drugs that are supposed to be going into Europe. And we also stop a lot of refugees. This, for Lukashenko, is a way to put pressure on Europe for sort of sanctioning him, for criticizing what he does in his country. And he thinks that this is the most painful way that he can take revenge.
I mean, it's painful for Europe, but at the centre of it, of course, are desperate people who he's effectively weaponising as part of this strategy. Is his goal here ultimately just revenge and punishment, or is he trying to get Europe to relieve those sanctions you mentioned?
Ultimately, the idea might be for him to relieve the sanctions, that this is basically him creating a kind of bargaining chip. But I think that behind this is sort of a fundamental miscalculation. He thinks that by putting and creating this crisis right on Europe's borders, that he can really force Europe to back down but it's become so egregious and I think such a sort of cynical move that I don't think that there's any way that at this point the EU really could do that. And it seems much more likely that the only way that he really thinks he can get out of this crisis is to continue to escalate it.
Andrew, one of the really strange things about this strategy is that Lukashenko can't really control how it ends. I mean, he can't guarantee that these folks that he has allowed to come to the country will ever make it to the EU or be repatriated. Roughly how many asylum seekers are there in Belarus right now as an estimate?
So the estimates for the number of people in the country right now is about 15,000, maybe more. A large percentage of them are from Iraqi Kurdistan. It's an extremely risky move for the Belarusian government as well, not just because of the danger posed to these people on the border, but just because they've also had a kind of massive influx of asylum seekers from the Middle East into a country that, to be honest, kind of isn't used to that. You can see pictures, and if you walk around Minsk, there are whole kind of areas of the city where people kind of dominating the hotels, even some people sleeping outside on the streets. That had actually transformed, you know, parts of the Belarusian city as well. And of course, the border has been, you know, changed a lot because of the situation as well. Lukashenko is taking on a lot of risk.
Ale ma swojego mocodawcę. I ten mocodawca jest w Moskwie. Tym mocodawcą jest prezydent Putin.
We've heard some European leaders say that behind Lukashenko is Vladimir Putin and the Russian government, that he's ultimately the puppet master here. What evidence is there for that, and why would he even be wanting to do it?
In terms of Russia's direct involvement, there is not sort of a smoking gun or 100% evidence that Russia is responsible for it as much as Lukashenko. But it would be very difficult for Lukashenko to do something like this without some kind of buy-in from Moscow. We've seen moments that say that they're maybe not 100% on the same page. Lukashenko, for instance, threatened to cut gas supplies from Russia to the EU at a certain point. The Kremlin kind of pushed back on that and said, well, we don't know exactly what Mr. Lukashenko is talking about. But, you know, in Russia's case, this is also a kind of a tactic. They want to have a certain degree of separation from the conflict to say, you know, we're just a bystander. But at the same time, they're happy to see Belarus and the EU really at each other's throats.
Andrew, one thing that we've seen, particularly on the Polish border, is really ugly scenes. I mean, the treatment of refugees that most people find pretty disgusting. And in the past, this migration issue has really divided the EU. But how has the continent reacted so far to what we're seeing on that border?
To a certain degree, we've seen a pretty high level of support from Brussels for Poland and for Lithuania, who have taken these really pretty extreme measures to try to push back migrants at the border.
Our aim is to bring home clearly the message to the authorities of the countries where the migrants come from, that this is a dangerous trap.
Right now we're seeing new sanctions. Those sanctions are going to target Belarusian officials. They may target groups of people or companies that help move and traffic migrants into Belarus.
The sanctions are always effective. They're always effective because they affect people. They affect their wealth and their capacity of movements. And today we are going to approve a new package of sanctions.
So far, it seems like it hasn't been successful in really driving a kind of wedge between these governments.
Okay, so it was sanctions that actually drew this form of retaliation from Belarus. And in response, we've had more sanctions. It just seems like this is escalating on both sides. And of course, at the very center of it, are very vulnerable people who are camping in what is a very, very cold part of the world. I mean, nobody knows how long they can stay there without many more of them beginning to die. I mean, is there an off-ramp here? Is this just going to keep escalating, or is there some pathway out of this?
It's very difficult to say. I think that a lot of this depends on decisions made by Alexander Lukashenko. And so that's going to be the key question in coming weeks, how far Alexander Lukashenko is willing to escalate this crisis and how many people he's willing to put in harm's way if he still thinks that he can get some kind of reward for this. And the second question, of course, is going to be to what degree Russia sees the situation maybe getting out of control or perhaps even endangering its own interests. So far, I mean, it's difficult to really see an off-ramp in terms of Lukashenko's behavior. He really hasn't shown any likelihood or any interest in really changing his behavior. I think that the last year has been transformative, that the government has really gone all in on its kind of survival instinct. And it's really hard to imagine deaths of migrants or of asylum seekers on the border influencing it to behave much differently.
Coming up, how Poland's treatment of asylum seekers on its border is the most violent and visible example of a wider EU policy. Lorenzo, these people aren't going anywhere. It's getting cold, at least 11 have died already. And as the days and weeks pass and this stalemate continues, many more could die in this forest on the doorstep of Europe. Do you think the EU and Poland can stomach that kind of rising death toll?
Well, I think we must remember that this humanitarian crisis is nothing new in Europe. Certainly not all the countries on the border with Europe, you know, has deployed over 10,000 soldiers to fight illegal immigration. But in almost all the borders of Europe, European forces reject migrants. Croatians reject migrants and push back migrants traveling on the Balkan route. They send them back to Bosnia. Slovenia is pushing migrants back to Croatia. Greece is pushing migrants back to Turkey. And since 2017, Italy has been paying the Libyan Coast Guard to bring migrants, you know, who try to cross the central Mediterranean. They're pushing them back to detention centers there. So we built walls, barbed wire. This is a thing we should remember, we must remember.
These are not isolated events. We saw similar incidents at other borders, and we can expect to see it again. And this is why, as part of our work on Schengen, we will set out new ways to respond to such aggression and ensure unity in protecting our external borders.
This whole crisis comes at a very delicate time for Poland's relations with the EU, most recently over Warsaw's unwillingness to respect certain EU laws on judicial independence, media freedom, and the rights of minorities. But it seems like on this question of the external border, of whether to take refugees, the EU actually stands shoulder to shoulder with that right-wing government in Poland.
Lukashenko is the bad guy in this situation, of course. He's provoking a refugee and humanitarian crisis, but he's also, it looks like, an Andy villain to mask Fortress Europe. Of course, I was expecting sanctions by Brussels against Belarus, but it sounds incredible they're not doing anything on Poland. I mean, the evidence of the pushbacks, the evidence of the violence used by the Polish authorities is right there, firsthand, and they're not doing anything to prevent this.
So it's easy to blame Lukashenko here, but at the heart of it, what he's exploiting is Europe's fear of refugees and their willingness to use brutality to keep them out.
Yes, exactly. I mean, this crisis, it could take months before ending. Turkey has blocked all the flights for people from Yemen, Iraq and Syria to Minsk. But there are other flights from Erbil, Damascus, and there are dozens of other flights from the Middle East. So we interview family members of an asylum seeker who died at the border between Poland and Belarus. And his family is still waiting for his body. Poland should send his body to Syria. And they were saying, while we are waiting for his body, we are seeing people lining up in front of travel agencies, willing and keen to leave the country. It tells you, barbed wire and walls, you know, all these things won't stop people.
Lorenzo, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Lorenzo Tondo, a Guardian correspondent based in Italy, and Andrew Roth, our Moscow correspondent. You can read all of their coverage of this crisis at the Belarus-Poland border at theguardian.com. And that is it for today. This episode was produced by Sammy Kent. Sound design was by Rudy Zagadlo. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Archie Bland. Back tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.